Hey everyone, welcome to the Behind the Scenes podcast. I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Audrey.
And on this podcast, we share the messy, honest, unfiltered, and not so curated parts of our life.
Think of this podcast as a bunch of bloopers with some truth bombs sprinkled throughout.
That's right. We're going to be taking you behind the scenes of our daily routines, our social media feeds, and what you may or may not have seen on TV.
We're going to be talking relationships, family, faith, business, basically whatever we are learning about, fighting about, or laughing about lately.
We're going to be sharing our daily life, our struggles, successes, and our roses and thorns from each week.
And we don't want this podcast to just be about us, so we're also going to go behind the scenes with some of the people who inspire us the most.
We hope this podcast feels like you're joining us for a campfire.
Come hang out.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Behind the Scenes podcast. We've got another...
I always feel like you start the podcast so slow. Welcome back to Behind the Scenes podcast.
You're the one holding Pine the Kitty on the floor.
I love Pine the Kitty.
So we've got another audio recording for you guys. And which one are we doing today, babe?
We're doing...
A Patient Pursuit.
Yeah, so we thought it would be fun to kind of sprinkle these audiobook sections of our audiobook into the podcast so you guys can just hear parts of our book throughout this season that we're doing on love, relationships, marriage, all that in light of our book. So this one is the first chapter, which is titled A Patient Pursuit, and it's all about our time of friendship from when we first started hanging out, really just strictly friendship zone is that chapter, and how we continued to prepare ourselves as individuals for one day being married during that time, and then also just what it looked like for you to bravely pursue me and persistently pursue me, and for us to spend lots of time around community and other friends and just learning more about each other.
Yeah, well, it's a really fun chapter. I was actually just listening to some of it right now. It's a really fun chapter, and it lays a super... Not only did it lay a strong foundation for us in our relationship, but it lays a really solid foundation for the kind of the rest of the whole book. Like, we kind of reference it for a while. And for us, it was kind of a season of singleness. So, you know, if you're single, this chapter's... I don't know. I think it's a good chapter. So, shall we get to it, babe?
Yeah.
All right. Let's do it. Without further ado, here is...
Are you going to say that before every audiobook?
I am going to say that before every...
We did write a book and it doesn't have things like without further ado in it, I promise.
Without any further ado, here is A Patient Pursuit.
One, A Patient Pursuit. Audrey. I couldn't stop thinking about the skinny jean wearing, Taylor Swift loving, vintage car driving farm boy. A few months had passed since our blind date at Macaroni Grill, and although I wasn't ready to be in a serious relationship, I was definitely curious about this boy. Over the next few months, whenever I was home from school for the weekend, Jeremy and I would rendezvous at church. Sometimes he met up with my friends and me ahead of time so we could drive together. Other times, he hung out with us after church for some late-night grub. While I was at school, Jeremy would send an occasional text with a movie, podcast, or song suggestion, but we hadn't gone on a second date or spent any time alone together. When I came home for summer break and it was warm enough to hang outside in the evenings, he invited me over to the farm for the first time. I approached the iconic Roloff Farm sign on Helvetia Road, turned down the gravel driveway, and proceeded to the dimly lit security gate. I glanced down at my phone to review Jeremy's text message instructions outlining which buttons to press on the keypad. After I pressed a few buttons, Jeremy's voice crackled back through the intercom. "Odj? It's me." "Access granted," announced a robotic voice as the gate opened, although it felt as in that same moment I also granted access to my heart in some small way. I followed the driveway through a tunnel of trees that led up to an enormous farmhouse. As I pulled up, a large group of guys and girls all hopped on to a giant passenger ATV thing and then sped off. I took a few deep breaths in the comfort zone of my car before emerging. Jeremy was standing outside and motioned for me to join him on a smaller ATV. "Hop on the mule," he said. "Everyone is headed out to the campfire pit." Mule? I knew he must be referring to the ATV, but I felt like an idiot for not being more fluent in farm lingo. I joined him on the mule and we buzzed past barns, farm equipment, animals, and other structures I couldn't quite make out in the dark. We reached the campfire pit where Zach, Jeremy's twin brother, was debriefing the rest of the gang on the rules. Unless you're a Little People Big World fan, you'd never know that Zach is Jeremy's twin brother. They look and act nothing alike. We were about to play a game of fugitive, but this was different from the suburban-style fugitive I was used to playing with my friends. For us public school kids, fugitive was essentially a giant game of tag, but the people who are it are cops and drive around in cars. We usually designated four cop cars with multiple people in each car. Everyone else was a fugitive. For the fugitives, the goal was to run from the starting location, usually a school parking lot, to the destination, usually another school parking lot, without getting tagged by the cops. Sometimes that required running through surrounding neighborhoods or parks to stay out of sight. To officially catch the fugitives, cops had to pull over, get out of the car, and tag them. Fugitives who got caught became cops and had to help catch other fugitives. The first person to make it to the destination without getting caught won the game. I took pride in my fugitive skills. Even when I was spotted, I could always outrun the cops. But the rules for farm fugitive turned out to be much different. When you grow up on 34 acres, you don't need to run through people's backyards and apartment complexes in order to play the game. Instead of cop cars, Zach drove around on a mule while the rest of us fugitives ran from one end of the farm to the other and back again. Instead of having to actually get out and tag us, Zach just had to call out our names. That meant stealth was even more important than speed. As Zach pointed out the boundary lines, I felt my confidence begin to plummet. Apparently, we are all supposed to run from the campfire pit to the pumpkin barn, which was a safe zone, and then back to the campfire pit. Except I had no idea where the pumpkin barn was. Before I could ask any questions, Zach was counting down and everyone took off running. I followed Jeremy into the dark forest and immediately felt disoriented. Within a minute or so, we could hear the mule closing in on us. Jeremy and his friend Mueller quickly vaulted over a fence that took me much longer to scale. By the time my feet hit the ground, the boys were long gone, and I was left to navigate Roloff Farms on my own. This was no ordinary farm. I felt like I was running through a farm version of Disneyland. I ran through the forest past a swamp fort, over a hill inhabited by sheep, goats, and cows, accompanied by a replica of Noah's Ark, through a miniature cowboy town, past a pirate ship, a Swiss Family Robinson treehouse, a castle, and a sports arena, and through fields of hay, berries, and flowers. Even in the dark, I was enamored with it all. For a while, I wondered if I would find the pumpkin barn before dawn, but I was eventually able to make out some pumpkin paraphernalia in the dark, a few signs for tours, and a maze of wooden fences that I guessed to be some kind of line management system for the pumpkin business. When I finally reached the safe zone, the barn, I was congratulated by Jeremy and Mueller. "Odge, you made it! We're gonna make a run for it up the high road. Come with us." As soon as Zach's mule crested over Roloff Mountain and dropped down behind barn 3, we sprinted through the pumpkin area and up a massive hill towards what I assumed to be the edge of the property. Even though I was breathing hard, I couldn't help but smile. The enchantment of this place and the wonder of this farm boy had already captured a piece of my heart. We made it to the campfire pit, unspotted and unscathed. We won! A few moments later, we were reunited with the rest of the fugitives, all of whom had been spotted and become cops. We laughed, shared our stories of escape or capture, and hung out by the fire. After everyone else eventually went home, I stayed, lingering as the minutes turned to hours. Jeremy and I talked and stared into the embers, occasionally lifting our gazes to make eye contact through the flames. I question him about all the unorthodox structures I'd encountered as a fugitive, and he downloaded on me the genesis of the farm and the story behind all its artifacts. Was any of this here when your parents bought the property? I asked. What made your parents want to build this crazy playground? The question put a twinkle in Jer's eye. He stood up to tell the story. When my dad was a kid, he had several surgeries on his legs. While he was recovering in the hospital, he dreamed of having adventures with cowboys, Indians, knights, and pirates. When he and my mom bought the farm, he finally got the chance to bring all those childhood dreams to life. Zach, Molly, Jacob, and I grew up playing cowboys and Indians in a mini cowboy town, playing knights in the castle, walking the plank on the pirate ship, and sleeping in our own Swiss Family Robinson treehouse. He smiled as he spoke. I could see how much he cherished this place. Wow, that's insane, I said, eager to hear the rest of the story. Jeremy described his childhood as every kid's dream. His parents, who are dwarfs, bought the farm when Jeremy and his twin brother Zach were still in the womb. It was just a rolling piece of land in the Oregon countryside, but Jer's dad had a vision for what it would one day become. Throughout Jer's childhood, his parents not only built the playground and tourist attraction that is now Roloff Farms, but they also renovated the old farmhouse and started the family pumpkin business. The fact that they did all of this as little people managing a giant farm while simultaneously raising four children was what eventually caught the attention of a few television networks. I assume the TV show helped build everything that was on the farm, but it was just the opposite. It was everything on the farm that helped catch the attention of the television networks. It really was, and still is, a magical place, Jeremy said with gratitude. Honestly, the farm has been like a third parent to me. It's taught me so much and made me who I am today. I was eager to know more about this farm and about the boy who had been so impacted by it. This was the first of many nights we would spend together by the campfire pit that summer. Even so, I wasn't looking for a serious relationship. My priorities were elsewhere, and falling in love felt far-fetched to me. I never got too caught up in longing for romance or seeking attention from guys. I was content on my own and took pride, perhaps too much of it, in my independence. I liked that my relationship status was not an indicator of my happiness or well-being. But the more time I spent with Jeremy, the more I started to wonder if this could ever be more than friendship. I remember thinking, if this ever does develop into something, what an amazing story we will be able to tell.
Jeremy. I knew from the start that Audrey was a special girl, someone I wanted to pursue and hopefully build a love story with. She seemed to have the fruit of the Spirit in her life that the Apostle Paul describes in Galatians 5. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. But I also knew that pursuing her meant I needed to get my act together. If I hoped to have even a shot at making this girl mine, I needed to become the kind of man who was deserving of her. At the time, I was in a season of laziness, losing sight of who I was becoming and what I was doing. Meeting Audrey was a firm reality check, so I got to work on myself. I dusted off my Bible and immersed myself in the truths about the kind of person I wanted to become, a man of discipline, purity, and direction, who pursued a deeper relationship with Jesus. Until Audrey, I had never met someone who held up a mirror to my life just by being herself. The light in her life showed me not only who I was, but also who I wanted to be. She inspired me to become a better person. The pursuit was on. It was clear skies and warm weather. Spring had sprung, and our crew of friends decided it would be a good night to head to the clearing for a bonfire. The clearing, as we dubbed it, was a half-logged sloping hill, the remnant of a logging operation that had been abandoned for quite some time. It was just a few miles north of the farm. The east side of the hill that faces North Portland is logged, leaving a beautiful lookout over the Willamette River where it snakes around Savi Island. Excited to make another memory, I called Audrey and asked if she wanted to come with me that evening. There's something I want to show you. Meet up with us at the farm tonight? Her only question was, what time? I liked her go-with-the-flow personality and her willingness to embrace the element of surprise. When she arrived at the farm, the rest of us were already loaded into the farm's pickup truck. Zach was behind the wheel, Roth and Scott were in the front seat of the cab, Dan and Jake were in the back seat,
and Mueller and I were in the truck bed, country rule number 37 says, never pass up an opportunity to ride in a truck bed, and we tried our best to abide by the country rules. Audrey jumped in the back of the cab, and I hollered up to Zach, good to go. The truck was packed with all the ingredients for a good time. Firewood, blankets, and a full cooler. We also brought along a guitar in hopes that Roth, our designated musician, would indulge us with some songs. Once we arrived at the clearing, we started walking up the trail to the point where it would eventually fork. The typical hiker always chose to go straight at the fork, but we peeled off to the right on the trail that led to a hidden spot we had discovered the previous summer. With the fire lit, blankets laid out, and the sun setting, we talked into the night. Mueller talked about his latest girlfriend. Roth told us stories about his customers at the local Linens and Things. Zach went on some soccer rant, and we all razzed him about his trunk full of Mountain Dew cans. The night was lighthearted, and we felt young. At one point, I walked 100 feet or so down the hill to take a tinkle. Audrey still laughs at me when I use this word. As I was walking back, I met Audrey on the trail. My heart skipped a beat, and I suddenly got all nervous. Finding myself alone with her sent a jolt of electricity through me. Hey, how are you doing? I asked. It was the best I could come up with on short notice. I'm good, she said, but I have to pee too. I started to explain that there were no porta potties, but she quickly cut me off. Evidently, there was no time to waste. I don't need one, she said. Can I go where you went? Oddly enough, this impressed me. A girl who's down to pee in the woods? Radical. Yes, of course, I said, pointing to the general area. I'll wait for you around the corner. When she emerged from the forest, we moseyed back up the hill. The Milky Way lit our path, and we paused to admire its brilliance. I glanced over at her and whispered, this is what I wanted to show you. We stood together in silence. There was peace in the cool night air. I can't remember how long we admired the sky, but we eventually made our way back up to the fire pit, where we were greeted by a hoot and a holler from Mueller. Apparently, our absence had been noted. Laughing off our embarrassment, we joined the group in putting out the fire and loading up the truck. On the ride back, seemingly by accident, although such things rarely are, it was just Audrey and me who ended up sitting in the truck bed. We were quiet most of the way, but it was the farthest thing from awkward. In fact, it was a silent joy. Nothing needed to be said. Never had silence felt so comfortable. We sat next to each other and leaned against the cab of the truck. The trees zipped past as the road behind us disappeared around every turn. I wanted to kiss her, but we hadn't even confessed our feelings for each other. If I did, I would be admitting my feelings for her, and it just felt too soon. Or was it? I knew I was falling in love, but I also knew the principle that it's wise to be patient when pursuing someone you don't want to lose. I didn't want a kiss to determine the status of our relationship or confuse my feelings for her. I didn't need a kiss. I knew that. And if I was going to kiss her, I wanted to do it on the foundation of a friendship that could support it. I knew we weren't there yet, so I refrained. Barely. Our relationship grew quite a bit that night. We were two friends getting to know one another without the pressure of the boyfriend-girlfriend label. We were becoming friends while also beginning to fall madly in love, but patiently. As spring became summer, we spent more and more time together. What some would call friend-zoned, I called pursuit. I got to know Audrey, and she got to know me. We developed increasing levels of trust, joy, respect, and admiration for one another. I got to see how she treated her parents, what she was interested in, what her hopes and dreams were, and the strength of her faith. There was a growing excitement of discovery between us. I was in hot pursuit, crafting gifts for her, taking her places, and spending time with her. Now, to be honest, not everything I experienced with Audrey at this point was a positive. I discovered that she had quite a few walls around her heart. I started to notice her walls more and more as our friendship grew. She seemed to be into me, but she wouldn't, or maybe couldn't, hint at something more than just friendship. I took the fact that she kept hanging out with me to be a good sign, but Audrey was a hard nut to crack. Her strong will kept her distant and difficult to read. Part of my patient pursuit included attempting to carefully break through her walls. As we continued to spend time together, I pursued her creatively and patiently. I think a girl like Audrey was a hard catch because she wasn't interested in men, but a man. I wanted to be that man, the one who fought for her heart. At times, it was very difficult, but I continued to pursue her because deep down, I believed that what we were experiencing was mutual. There was an intensity between us, an in-loveness that invited both vulnerability and caution. We were careful with one another because we didn't want to mess it up. This friendship we were nurturing allowed us to build the foundation for a love story without getting lost in a cloud of emotions from physical intimacy. I believed that if I kept pursuing her, Audrey was a treasure worth waiting for. A word to the single guys out there. If you're pursuing a woman who is hard to catch, don't give up. It means she has standards, and she isn't about to fall for just any guy with a smartphone who sends her heart emojis. If you're serious about wanting a lifelong relationship with this woman, your patient pursuit is part of what qualifies you as husband material. Pursuit takes work, and so does marriage. If you learn to pursue before you say I do, it's a skill that will continue to serve you well beyond the I do. When the real thing hits you, pursuit itself becomes a pleasure. I wanted nothing more than to find a way to Audrey's heart. I was eager to press in, and doing so made me feel alive. I wanted more. And if you're listening to this book, I'm guessing you do too. So take a risk and press in. Just don't get weird. You don't want to end up on the creeper list. Pursuit is politely persistent. My patient pursuit was the scariest thing I had ever done, but it was also the most exhilarating. There were times I was tempted to cower in the corner with fear of rejection, but if I did, I'd lose her. Audrey was the type of girl I wanted to take a few arrows of rejection for to have a chance at love with. Rejection is temporary. The glory of true love is eternal. As the wise King Solomon said, he who finds a wife finds a good thing. Proverbs 18:22. However, he never said it would be easy. On rare occasions, this finding may fall into your lap with a note from God attached that reads, "You're welcome." Kind of like how I met Audrey. It sort of just happened. But our relationship coming to be was another story. It required traveling a long distance and navigating some tough terrain, valleys of uncertainty and mountains of doubt. That's the road of the patient pursuit.
Audrey, I changed my outfit 3 times that morning, but I wasn't deciding between dresses and jewelry. I was deciding between mud clothes and hiking boots. I had no idea what to wear for the occasion, but I wasn't about to be the rookie suburban girl who asked. The sun was barely beaming through the blinds in my bedroom window when Zach's Subaru Outback, full of country boys, pulled up to my parents' house. In addition to Zach, the crew included Jeremy, Mueller, Roth, and Jake. Jeremy got out of the car and came to my door. Whether he was picking me up or dropping me off, he always came to the door. I wasn't used to that in a guy, but I respected him for it. After joining the rest of the boys in the car, I was told we had one more stop to make on our way. We were picking up Tori, Zach's new girlfriend. Relief, I wouldn't be the only girl on this adventure. After a few hours of listening to country music, reminiscing about past summer excursions, and dreaming up future ones, we reached our destination, Ape Cave. Ape Cave is the longest continuous lava tube in the continental United States and the third longest in total mapped length in North America. The tunnel runs 2.5 miles underground just north of Mount St. Helens in Washington State. Ape Cave is sometimes referred to as Ape Caves, plural, because the main entrance falls between the lava tube's two ends, the lower cave and the upper cave. The upper cave is a 2.8 mile hike round trip. First, there is a 1.5 mile descent on slippery, dark, rocky terrain in an underground tunnel. The tunnel eventually leads to a ladder that ascends to an opening in the cave's ceiling, the exit. The return hike follows a 1.3 mile trail that winds through the forest back to the main entrance. The lower cave is just a 1.5 mile hike round trip and is considerably easier. The terrain is flat, broad, and covered with sand and mud rather than loose rock. As we piled out of the car and walked toward the main entrance, it wasn't even a consideration. We headed straight for the upper cave. We immediately encountered terrain that demanded both agility and caution. Well, for me at least. The boys, on the other hand, took off like Super Mario Bros. I could hear the iconic theme song playing in my head as I watched them bounce over the rocks full steam ahead. For them, this was beginner-level stuff. I was torn between wanting to impress Jeremy by bounding ahead and not wanting to get myself in trouble. I wasn't afraid or uncoordinated, but I was cautious. Unlike the rest of the gang, I had a little more at stake if I got injured. If I slid on a rock or twisted an ankle, my collegiate running career would be on the line. So I methodically wobbled my way into the darkness, hunched over, sometimes on all fours, much more ape-like. As we progressed deeper into the cave, it grew colder and darker until Jeremy finally struck a match and lit the lantern. Something about this scene ignited a spark in me. Or maybe I just have a thing for lanterns. I'd never seen a real old-school lantern fired up before. Boys from my high school didn't own this kind of stuff. But I love that Jeremy brought the lantern instead of a flashlight. He was prepared, but in a non-conventional kind of way. It made our whole adventure feel more enchanting. The light from the lantern bounced off the walls of the cave. It was an absolute necessity for our journey onward. We hiked a little farther and then decided to turn off the lantern to see how dark it really was. I'd never experienced such utter darkness with my eyes open. Blind to everything around us, we walked around like mummies with outstretched arms until we bumped into each other. Jeremy and I connected for a moment. I knew it was him because I felt the lantern brush past my leg. It was one of the first times we'd touched each other. It lasted just a split second, but even in the dark, I felt the chemistry between us building. What if he kisses me? No one would know, and we wouldn't even be able to see each other's reaction. Jeremy was unpredictable and charming. It seemed like something he would do, which made me incredibly nervous. I was interested in Jeremy, but I definitely wasn't ready for that. This was one of many kissable moments we would have over the next year and a half of being just friends. They all would have made for epic first kiss stories, but we refrained. The full extent of our physical connection in those years was limited to bumping into each other in Ape Cave, sitting shoulder to shoulder in the back of the truck, and high-fiving after our fugitive victory. Even when we side-hugged goodbye, we were sure to leave room for the Holy Spirit. You might be chuckling now, but we'll talk about how we messed up in later chapters. However, I think if we had jumped directly into a dating relationship, we would have been tempted to flirt with sexual intimacy much sooner. Instead, for the 2 years before we officially dated, we hardly touched each other. Jeremy relit the lantern and we eventually reached the end of the tunnel with no significant injuries. We ascended the ladder and greeted daylight like newborns, squinting and stretching to adjust to our newly bright environment. As we hiked back to the car, Jeremy and I fell into an easy and meaningful conversation. This was how our adventures often unfolded. In the thick of it, we were focused on fully enjoying the moment. Afterward, the adrenaline rush fueled honest, refreshing, and meaningful conversations. We learned so much about each other through our adventures and the conversations that followed. Whether it was geocaching, going to drive-in movies, bike riding, or cruising around in Jared's vintage orange BMW until we got lost, every adventure was an opportunity to discover more of each other's character. We both knew that strong relationships come from strong friendships, so we continued to build the foundation of our friendship. For me, it was also a chance to watch for any potential red flags. It prevented me from falling into the blind love trap, hurrying into a relationship, dabbling with sexual intimacy, and becoming emotionally attached. You know, like when the person you're dating becomes the most talented, most interesting, and most extraordinary person in the universe. And if that line doesn't sound familiar, please go watch the Lego Movie after you finish this chapter. It's sure to solve all your dating problems. As time passes, your friends and family might start to raise concerns about this most extraordinary person you're dating, but you won't listen because you literally can't see what they see. This is a titanic problem. One of the key ingredients to a healthy relationship is generous servings of input from the people who love and care about you. Additionally, I didn't want to spend too much time with a guy I couldn't see a future with. Ultimately, what's the point of dating if not to find your spouse? In the words of novelist Nicholas Sparks, I mean, if the relationship can't survive the long term, why on earth would it be worth my time and energy for the short term? Falling in love with someone you don't see a future with always ends with broken hearts. As I watched a close friend experience this heartbreak, I sensed the Lord warning me, you can't help who you fall in love with, but you can help who you spend time with. If you're single and searching for a lifelong soulmate, search for a friend. We have all had that friend, maybe it's you, who met someone they were attracted to and started dating 5 days later. A few months pass and the relationship crumbles. Why? Because there was no foundation and no infrastructure to build on. Dating before becoming friends is like trying to make a sandwich by starting with the condiments rather than the bread. It's messy and it just doesn't work. You have to lay down the bread first, then the condiments have something to stick to, and there's a foundation for the meat and cheese. Okay, I realize that may not be the most profound analogy, but you get the idea. A longing for friendship and relational connection is hardwired into our DNA. Friendship is not a means to an end, but a key ingredient for meeting our innate human needs for relational connection. I think that's why so many couples say they married their best friend. It's much easier to add physical intimacy to friendship than it is to cultivate a strong friendship after having been physically intimate. That's one of the reasons Jeremy and I are such advocates for being friends first. In our experience, friendship allows the groundwork for healthy pursuit to take place. To all the single women listening to this, volume up. You're not giving a man the chance to pursue you if you're skipping the friendship space and jumping straight into getting physically intimate or chasing down every nice guy who looks your way. Not to mention, if you're the one doing all the chasing, chances are the guy you're after does not want to be caught, or he's just not that into you. Friendship allows us time to find out if the person we're pursuing or being pursued by is marriage material before the relationship gets muddled with sexual intimacy. You'll find out if he's willing to risk rejection and is determined to be a thoughtful, faithful, and loyal friend. Our period of friendship gave Jeremy the opportunity to pursue me and gave us a strong foundation for when it was time to get physically intimate. I also want to address a lie that may be creeping into your mind right about now. There are no guys out there who will pursue me like that. If you believe this lie, you'll live this lie. Jeremy is not an exception. Don't you believe it for a second. Of course, in my biased opinion, I think he is a one-of-a-kind guy, but he's not an anomaly. It's like that classic quote often attributed to Henry Ford, "Whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right." Whether you think you'll never find a godly, romantic, handsome guy, or you think you will, you're right. The friends first approach also gave Jeremy and me the freedom to get to know each other without being pressured by the dating label or the intoxicating fog of physical intimacy. Once you open the door to physical intimacy, you're increasingly compelled to move very fast in that direction. But what if you don't want to? What if you just want to get to know each other for a while? What if you want the next person you date, or the only person you date, to be your spouse? Western culture puts too much sexual pressure on dating, and Christian culture often puts too much pressure on the idea of finding the one. As a general rule, whenever pressure is present, there is a higher chance of injury. I think that principle applies as equally to relationships as it does to hot water boiling on a stove or to an overinflated tire. Anything that's overpressurized is dangerous. When it comes to dating, patience deflates pressure. There is a reason the best intimate relationships come from friendships. When the rush of those first electric feelings fade, as they inevitably do, you'll still be doing life with someone you enjoy. You'll have someone to laugh and adventure with, someone who gets your inside jokes. You'll have a friend. Starting as friends gave us the foundation we needed for a healthy dating relationship. It empowered Jer's pursuit, eliminated the pressure of the dating label, protected our purity, and kept us from being blinded by emotional euphoria. Our friendship gave way to the patient pursuit. Much like the lantern was a necessity to navigate our journey through Ape Cave, so our friendship was a necessity to navigate our journey to marriage. Much like the Milky Way lit our path to the clearing, our friendship glimmered bright with anticipation over what might be. Much like the campfire ignited meaningful conversations, friendship was the spark that ignited our love. The actor Bruce Lee wrote, "Love is like friendship caught on fire, very pretty, often hot and fierce, but still only light and flickering. As love grows older, our hearts mature, and our love becomes as coals, deep, burning, and unquenchable.
So Patient Pursuit is one of my favorite chapters in the book just because it's three really fun stories kind of clumped together to tell basically the reader, listener, whoever encounters the book, that a lot of our love story was built on just playing together
being
and adventuring
friends.
Together and doing new things, experiencing new things together. And I'm going to botch it now, but I think the line at the end was something along the lines of, like, you know, a lot of our deep, meaningful conversations came after these adventures that we would go on, or the adventure, you know, whatever it was that we were doing with a group of friends then sort of set us up for a deeper conversation, because we got to see each other experiencing these new things together or pulling each other into these new experiences that maybe one of us had experienced and the other hadn't. And it was just a really good, like, learning experience about each other, and just a fun chapter. Also, I love that chapter.
It is a good chapter. Really chapter. I would say also we were just very, I was very considerate of the circumstance. You know what I mean? Because, like, of course, I think we both maybe would have liked it to happen a little quicker. Everyone always does, right? They want it quick and now, but, you know, knowing kind of the situation and reading your body language and behavior and how we interacted together, mm-hmm. like, I was very considerate about that, like, after listening to it. Mm-hmm. And that changed the way I approached you and the relationship. And I mm-hmm. think that was, I mean, obviously it worked and turned out well, but mm-hmm. I think just a lot of people, if you just, like, slowed down for a second and was a little bit, you approached your relationship or every relationship for that matter, just with a little bit more consideration.
And as friends.
Yeah, and as friends, but just approach it with consideration. Like, how should I be approaching this? What would work? What's not? Like, how would they feel? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of like a broad brushstroke to sum up. I think a lot of my intention throughout that chapter was just being very considerate as to where you were at, what I was doing. Being a patient pursuer, exactly. Yeah. So,
anyways, if you guys want to keep listening to the audiobook, you can go get the audiobook now. It's available. So you go to Amazon, you can order the audiobook or wherever you listen to your audiobooks, and you can listen to us narrate the entire book.
As far as Amazon goes, the audiobook is a little, you know, little tricky to figure out. Amazon's kind of got to figure this out, I think. But you got to go to Amazon and then you purchase the audiobook version. And then you have to download the Audible app. And then your Amazon purchase will show up on your Audible app.
Probably podcast listeners know how to do that.
It took me like 10 minutes to figure it out the other day. And I was like, I'm going
to
email.
There's other ways to listen to audiobooks.
There is other ways to listen to audiobooks.
Can't you do iTunes?
Yeah, you can do a bunch of other ways. But I'm saying is, it took me a little bit, so I just thought I'd give some of you guys a tip there. Okay, well, anyways. And also, you guys, the book has been out for couple days now. So if you have read it, if you're a quick reader like myself, or you take a little bit longer like Audrey, whatever the case is, if you have finished it, we would really, really, really appreciate it if you took a moment to go leave a review. I mean, you can leave that review anywhere. Amazon works as well. But again, it just helps with all the algorithms, all the systems, same way of leaving a review at the podcast. It helps the podcast get out there and gets known and seen. And plus we read them. We read every single one and they're really, really encouraging. And
your reviews, like, obviously on Amazon, could encourage somebody else to read the book, and the book could inspire, encourage, and challenge them in their own love story. Yeah. So, take a second to do that. If the book was impactful to you and you feel like it's worth your time to go write a review, then we would love it.
We'd really appreciate it.
That's it. That's all for you guys.
That's it. That's all for you guys. We will see you in a couple days.
Yeah. We'll see you on Tuesday.
Bye.